Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to remember those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must henceforth be forever cast into the abyss of dead names. In this moment of our remembrance, we prove with great grief and wailing the sincerity of our noble tolerance. What we once wrongly allowed in the ignorance of white privilege has become the cleansing rite of virtue signaling we use to prove our purity. Join with me now as we remember those we've lost. First, the word mother. As this week, the National Education Association, that completely neutral, impartial, and nonpartisan teachers union, moved to replace the awful transphobic term mother with the far more LGBTQIA+ friendly term birthing parent in their contracts. No longer shall that one single solitary transgender male birthing parent teacher in the United States have to suffer the insult of hearing the awful term mother shoved in his face. No longer shall those who don't fit the traditional female mold, or even any single gender mold at all, have to endure the indignity of being dead-gendered when they take birth parenthood leave like anyone else. Now, I understand. Some people will say that calling uterus successful women, womine, or trans men by the terms birthing people or birthing parents will seem a little clunky at first, but that's the point. As Romanovsky's first maxim of relanguaging teaches us, we must make those who use the language of oppression so uncomfortable with their words that they cannot even repeat the injustices to themselves without feeling guilty for it. The point is not to create fluidity of terminology. The point is to make terminology so bad that it proves how virtuous we are in enduring the pain of ruining language for the sake of justice. The linguistic revolution begins by breaking all the old words, especially ones as old as mother. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly Elegy and a Republican Senate candidate in Ohio for his unbelievably sexist comments in the wake of the Supreme Court's massacre of Roe v. Wade. In a tweet, Vance wrote, quote, "If your worldview tells you that it's bad for women to become mothers, but liberating for them to work 90 hours a week in a cubicle at the New York Times or Goldman Sachs, you've been had." I know. Can you believe the audacity? See, the big problem here is that J.D. Vance broke the first and only real rule of feminism: never say everything we believe out loud at the same time. Yes, of course we recognize there's tension in simultaneously celebrating birthing parents while also celebrating women who avoid becoming birthing parents. But the solution to this is that we never say both things out loud at the same time. Duh. Because we're no longer constrained by the oppressive patriarchal constructs of logic and avoiding contradictions, we're free to embrace the duality of the feminist way. Likewise, we also recognize that there's tension in the fact that we advocate for women and against men, while also defining successful womanhood as doing the exact opposite of what that term has always meant, and instead defining it as the same way men define successful manhood. But this is understandable. Why are men the only ones allowed to enjoy sexual promiscuity without consequences and to have professional achievement through overworking and neglect of a family? Why should women have to be the ones to make babies and enjoy the deep satisfaction of birthing parenthood? Surely we know the genders are equal when women can have the same unsatisfying achievements that men enjoy. It's so typical of a misogynist like J.D. Vance that he would try to deny young women the dream that they too can be full of regret and emptiness at the end of their lives, just like so many highly accomplished professional men. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And finally, we want to take time to celebrate the public confession and genuine repentance of Friends creator Marta Kaufman, who recently admitted that she had made one of the most successful television shows of all time in such a way that it marginalized persons of color completely. In demonstration of her authentic born-again faith in Woke the Almighty, Kaufman is donating $4 million toward African-American studies at her alma mater, Brandeis University. As our holy seventh credo of virtue signaling teaches us, faith without donations is dead. As she told the Los Angeles Times, "It took me a long time to begin to understand how I internalize systemic racism. I've been working really hard to become an ally and anti-racist, and this seemed to me to be a way that I could participate in the conversation from a white woman's perspective." So true. Even though at one point in the sitcom, Ross does have a serious relationship with a black paleontologist, and despite its pioneering inclusion of a lesbian relationship, Friends went awry because it showed a group of six close New York City peers, all of whom are white, and as we know, the maximum number of white people allowed in any group without being racist is three. every group of four or more white people without an African American is by definition evidence of systemic racism. Of course, this means that virtually every successful American sitcom, from Seinfeld to MASH to Big Bang Theory to Raymond to Roseanne to Tool Time, Cheers, How I Met Your Mother, and even Gilligan's Island are and always will be nothing but bald-faced racist manifestations of the Klan mind. Good for Marta Kaufman for finally joining the movement, and good for all those who realize the only purpose of television sitcoms is to advance the holy values of diversity and inclusion. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, with these cleansing rites performed, may we all go forth in loving tolerance and microaggress no more. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.